Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In the first segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Dave Velicogna from the Track 3 Skiing Association. So tell me a little bit about the Track 3 Skiing Association.
Sure. Well, my name's David Velicogna, and I'm the Executive Director of Ontario Track 3 Ski Association. And what our organization is we're a not-for-profit organization. And essentially what we do is, here in Ontario, we have a number of ski programs where we bring children out to, children from the ages of 6 to 19 out to ski hills during the week and on weekends. And we enable to teach them how to ski and snowboard. And all of the kids in our program, there's about 220 kids in Ontario, have various disabilities of some sort. And whether they're physical disabilities or mental health challenges that they have. And we just try and provide a good time for these kids so that they enable their own selves to learn how to ski and snowboard. And so the organization is built up of a number of volunteers, actually quite a few number of volunteers. There's about 450 volunteers that we have that help these kids to, over time, learn how to ski and snowboard. And that's essentially what the organization is in a nutshell.
So what types of disabilities are most common among these kids?
Well, we cover off pretty well every disability you can think of. Originally, the organization started back in 1972, and the first children that we worked with were amputees. But then, as the organization had a lot of success working with these kids and teaching them how to ski, other people asked, hey, could you help us with these other kids? So over the years, we found that we're working with children that have a number of physical disabilities, whether it's brain injuries or cerebral palsy or multiple sclerosis. Some of the students we have do not have sight. They're blind. And as I mentioned before, amputees. But then we also found that over the years, we started working with children with mental health challenges. So we have many kids in the program that have Asperger's, autism, and Down syndrome as well. Well, that's kind of the major areas, but there's other disabilities from a physical and mental health area that are also covered off as well.
So, is there any sort of modified equipment available to these athletes?
Yes, absolutely. especially in the early days of the organization, working with children with their amputees, or The name Track 3 actually comes from the days of where we had modified equipment for these kids. And a kid with a child that's an amputee would have one ski, but would have these outriggers that would have in each hand, which would be two other skis but used on their arms. And the name Track 3 comes from the path that would be laid in the snow by having three skis on the snow, hence the word Track 3. So as we we worked with different children over the years. We adapted equipment to their needs. So if a child arrives at our ski hill in a wheelchair, is not able to walk, we have what we have called a sit ski. It's basically skis with a if you want to call it like a chair or a bucket on it, and it's and that piece of adaptive equipment would have the student inside of it, but be held and and skied with two instructors. So we have different types of equipment for different kids, and there's an extensive list of outriggers that would go on their arms, or sit skis where they would actually sit inside the skiing device. Over time, some skiers would be using a mono ski. And what we've also found in more recent couple of years is some of the kids that have more strength on one side of their body than the other found snowboarding to be a very effective way of learning how to have fun on the hill. Because with snowboarding, there's less reliance on having strength on both sides, and you can adapt to snowboarding quite effectively as well. So we basically adapt the equipment to the needs of the child and the disability. So there's kind of various categories of some kids that cannot physically ski with two skis may use a sit ski. And various other types of equipment.
So, in your time with the organization, is there any one success moment that stands out for you?
Well, I've been executive director for a very short time. I've been here for 3 months as executive director. Prior to that, I've been and still am a volunteer ski instructor with the program on Sundays. I've worked with a number of different children. I'd say, you know, there's various kids that come to mind. But in particular, there's one little boy named Daniel. He has autism. He started the program when he was 6 years old. He's now eight. And I just remember one day being on the hill with him, where he felt like, or you know, it was challenging for him, and he wanted to ski a couple of runs and then take a break and maybe ski a couple of runs going for lunch. But through my training with children with autism, I just focused on the goal and communicated with him effectively so that instead of doing two or three runs that day, we ended up doing like 19 runs. And his parents were very happy, and I was very happy. And since then, he's been progressing. So he's one of the little success stories of Track 3, and there's so many. Some of our kids maybe were physically disabled but want to do racing and Paralympics. Other kids have other disabilities, and they just progress a little bit slower, and they just, you know, the objective is to put a smile on their face and have them just enjoy the day. So there's different kinds of success stories. Some are very athletic, and some are just about putting smiles on kids' faces. But Daniel's one of the boys that kind of comes to mind as a young lad where we put a smile on his face.
So if you could send any one message about the need for inclusive athletics such as this, what would it be?
If I could send one message? I think if I look at the 200 plus kids that we have, I think the message that we encourage and like to send is that we enable each child to the best of their ability. If they're an athlete that has a physical challenge, we enable them to become a para-athlete. If they're a child that has some mental health challenges, we adapt to that and learn how to work with a kid, for example, that has autism, and enable them. Many of the kids that we deal with or we work with have they have challenges in their life. They go to school, and when they leave for school, often they go home and they've got various types of therapy to go through. And we like to think that, believe that we can enable these children by once a week, whether it's an evening or on a weekend, they get to get out with Track 3 and enable themselves. So it's not just us teaching them how to ski and snowboard, but where they actually learn skills and enable themselves and develop some friendships. So that they've got more self-confidence in themselves and can learn a skill that often some of their friends at school don't have. So I think the key word is enabling themselves.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Pardon me?
Thank you very much.
Okay.
It's an amazing opportunity provided by Track 3. In years past, some among us might have said someone who's blind or has a vision impairment could not ski. They wouldn't be safe. There's no way to do it. But it's organizations like this one that are pioneering, that are making it that much easier for other organizations to say there is a precedent. There has been success in this area. How can we build on this? That's what Disability Life is all about. Building on successes, taking what works, taking the next step forward. I've said many times that with any given condition, it's not always a matter of finding an immediate cure, but it can be a matter of taking steps, progress, and those are the victories that can make life that much different. For disability athletics in particular, when a person with a disability is out there just doing what they love to do, engaging in the sport that they're passionate about, they're not thinking about perceived limitations. They're not thinking about how is this like able-bodied athletics or how is this not like able-bodied athletics. They're just out there enjoying themselves, doing what they love to do. That's how it should be. Just taking in the experience and growing stronger as a person for having had equal opportunity, equal access. Athletics, it's an ever-expanding world in disability life. Finding that more and more athletes are competing with strength and vigor. When years ago, disability athletics was considered, oh, just give them a token gesture. But it holds great meaning, great strength for these athletes. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Head to the St. Clair Center for the Arts on Saturday, January 17th for the Save African Child Uganda's third annual Winter Gala, featuring entertainment by Lady J Mac Trio and Briella Framboise. The SACU Gala will also have a chicken and pasta dinner. Doors at 5 p.m. and dinner at 6. Tickets are $40 for adults, $10 for children ages 4 to 10, and 3 and under are free, with all proceeds going to SACU and the school and shelter they built in Buwondo, Uganda. For tickets, contact Jerry at 519-962-5840 or send an email to sutts@hotmail.com.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handicapable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Dave Velicogna from the Track 3 Ski Association. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Joe Torres from the Wheelchair Dancers Organization. So tell me a little bit about the Wheelchair Dancers Organization.
Okay. The Wheelchair Dancers Organization started in 2008 and basically started with Beverly Worthing, who is our founder and president. About 18 years ago, she was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy, which progressively put her in a wheelchair. And you know, she's been able to dance and sing and do normal things, you know, till then. Then about a year after she was in that condition, she just really ended up being sort of a recluse for a while. And with encouragement from her recreational therapist at Sharp Hospital here in San Diego, she started talking about things she liked to do. And she said, well, I love to dance. She said, well, you know, let's see if we can do a dance thing. So one thing led to another, and Sharp Hospital sponsored our first wheelchair dancing class. And that's how our wheelchair dancing classes were formed here in San Diego.
So can you tell me a little bit about the styles of dance, the techniques that are used?
Right, right. Well, what we do is, you know, it's adaptive dancing. So it's not going to be exactly as you would dance ballroom with stand-up partners. But what we do is we do ballroom. So we do the smooth dances, we do waltz and tango and foxtrot, and then we do some Latin that we teach. So we'll be teaching cha-cha and salsa and merengue and that those type of dances. And then just recently we started with the hip-hop and some of the jazz styles, because, you know, we have younger people getting involved now, and they want to dance also. And our biggest thing is everyone has a dance in them, and everyone deserves to dance.
So, in your time with the organization, can you tell me about some of the successes you've seen?
I'm sorry?
In your time with the Wheelchair Dancers Organization, have you seen any great success moment stands out for you?
A standout moment?
Yeah.
I think my standout moment is February 16th, 2013. We set out to set a world record of wheelchair dancers and their partners dancing together. So we chose a Latin rhythm, and we did a dance called the bachata, and we had close to about 40 partners doing a ballroom Latin routine. And we had media come, and we had sponsors, and we had everybody. We had over 400 people in attendance, and it was the first time where a lot of these a lot of our community were able to see what we were doing and the fun and the excitement and the commitment and all the things that were involved with this community put together this dance routine that we rehearsed for 3 or 4 months, and it was an incredible event. There wasn't a dry eye in the house.
So, how do you go about spreading the word about the organization?
Well, getting to our community, the disabled community, it's not an easy task. So, a lot of what we do, we have a website, and we do a lot of community partnerships. So we go out to where the people are, and so as we do that, we do presentations. People see what we're doing. We gather names and numbers of people and that type of thing. Sometimes we get TV coverage and news coverage, and they talk about what we're doing. And that type of thing. There's a number of community events that we attend on a weekly basis, and we go on and we dance with our people, and people see us and it's an awareness thing. They're able to come, they talk to them. Little kids come and they dance with people with wheelchairs. I think it breaks down, you know, stereotypes and that type of thing, where afraid to approach somebody in a wheelchair. This breaks all of those barriers. We go out socially, and people come and say, "What, can I do that? Can I dance with you guys?" And they come and they dance, and we teach them. And a lot of them come and they volunteer and they help us with our class.
So, if you could send any one message about the need for wheelchair dance and inclusion in the arts, what would you say?
If I would say one thing, it would be that, especially in dance and in the arts, it's an expression of who you are. And who you are is not determined by the condition that you're in. And our awareness and our biggest goal is to bring awareness to the community that people with disabilities, in wheelchairs or not, our people have the same likes and dislikes as everybody. And all they're looking for is inclusion in every aspect of their life. I think that would be the message that I would like to say.
So what's next for the organization?
Well, what's next for the organization is we've seen the need out there for young people to get involved. And it's a really hard community to get to. So for the future, what we're looking to do is to go into schools. We did do some school programs last year, but we want to do more school programs. I have a little hip-hop group that I'm starting. I have a 5-year-old and a 6-year-old, both in wheelchairs all their lives. And if you watch the dance, you would not think that at all. They're great, they're exciting, and all that. And for people to see that, our goal is to give those young people the confidence to be able to do something like that, and just help them think that there is really no limitation to what they can do. And so our strive for the future is to go after youth at the Horizon Youth Program and to do these type of things. Now, the other thing is we don't charge anybody for these lessons. So this is all done by sponsorship, by donations, and that type of thing. So it's a hard road sometimes, but it's something that we have to feel in our hearts that we have.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Oh, okay.
I think Joe had exactly the right idea when it comes to the future of disability life. It is all about reaching the next generation, letting them know things are possible. Fact is, we as a society are establishing policies and more accessible spaces today. What's that going to mean if we don't keep it up for the future? If we don't make the effort to ensure that individuals with disabilities know not only their rights, but their capabilities too. It's so easy to underestimate oneself when they're frustrated or just recently coming to grips with a condition. The truth is, you don't know what's possible until you take that chance, take that step. And the fact is, there are always going to be people there to support you. It might take some searching, might take a little extra effort to find the right balance between support and working on one's own to explore their capabilities. I personally think that dance is a great outlet for individuals with disabilities. It's reaching the community in a way that's meaningful for them. It's something that young people can, in fact, relate to, and they can see this, and they'll just look at it as a great performance. they're not necessarily going to be focusing on the disability aspect of it. Fact is, a person with a disability puts on a great show, great dance performance. We as a society should just look at it for that. Not say it's great because they overcame this, this, and this. No. It's great because it is their art. They put their heart and their soul into it. They made the effort. They took the time. And they even, in an act of generosity, shared it with the community. And it is an amazing thing, I think, especially in terms of disabilities art. It's a wonderful thing these performers can achieve. They have the strength that they have said to themselves, my disability is one aspect of who I am. It's not the totality. But what I find even more important about that is they're actually sharing it with the community. It's being out there, it's saying to the community, hey, we have some great artists among us. And that can, in a very meaningful way, express to the community just how much talent and strength individuals with disabilities do in fact have. Having a great light, a great skill, is fine. What you choose to do with that is what defines the impact it will have. Getting the message out there, getting the opportunity to go to a crowd of people and to say, hey, this is what I want to do, this is what I love to do, and just sharing that with them. And it is absolutely correct that it's easy to forget that these people do have a type of difference. Fact is, we all have differences. We, as a society, don't have any two people who are exactly alike. Fact is, we should all be very willing to ask those questions. To say to ourselves, this person has a disability. I don't know what they're capable of, but I want to spend the time. I want to find out. And that's really what organizations like the Wheelchair Dancers Organization are doing. They're not in this to make a profit. They said they offer their lessons at no cost. It's just to make things better for the disability community. Truth is, any disabilities organization run entirely by volunteers or that doesn't make great profit from the work they do, those are the ones that speak to me the most. Because you find a staff full of people just out there trying to make things better, whether it's had a personal impact on them or not. Disability has struck in every family. Just comes down to recognition. But for volunteers and staff members who go into organizations like this one, they really do have the heart and the passion for the work they do. In many cases, I see it just as they want the disabled community to recognize their own strength, to go that much farther, but not to keep it to themselves, to take the lessons and the strengths they've acquired, share it with others. And that is the basis of real change in society. Taking the strength you have learned, seeing how many others can benefit from it. Many of us have had someone in our lives who have stood beside us when we needed a word of encouragement or a little bit of an extra push. And these are the people who encourage us to reach our best. Whether we have a disability or not, they're really the ones building for the future, providing the strength today so that a person with a disability or an able-bodied member of society and carry it forward for tomorrow. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.